You're listening to Face Off, episode 115, recorded April 4th, 2011. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I am your very sick host, Jade Robbins.
And I am your not-so-sick host, Mark Sanborn.
In this podcast, we talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can get the show notes for this episode by going to faceoffshow.com, and the show notes are always very helpful. But yeah, I tell you what, I am very sick, and it's hard to record an audio program while very sick.
Yeah, I know how you feel. I was sick a few weeks back, and I remember we did a show, and all I wanted to do is get through it. Because it's just, you know, you're snotted up and it's running and you sound goofy sometimes.
Yeah, I just want to cuddle up with a nice bottle of NyQuil and say goodnight. And goodnight, sweet prince. Hey, there's something else. There's something else I wanted to talk to you about in the news and follow-ups, but I can't remember. Anyways, you know, you're going to be sick because you came and visited me this weekend, and I was full-on illness. So get ready. Take your vitamin D.
Oh, I'm going to hit the D double time.
Every single thing. Get vitamin D, echinacea, some sort of yarrow root or something, whatever. Get it all. You need it.
A gallon of orange juice a day or something.
There you go. All right. So before we get into our geek tool, I want to thank our first show sponsor, which happened to be AgileTask, the web app that it is an agile design. Okay, so this is what I want to talk about. Actually, this is what I want to talk about. One of the big things, some of the feedback we've been hearing about AgileTask is people have been saying, but, you know, I'm not really an agile guy. I don't do agile development, so I'm not going to use AgileTask. Well, we are here to debunk that myth. It is not a myth. You do not have to work in an agile place or be an agile developer to use AgileTask, because it's, you know, the premise started that way, but really it's just a tool to help you keep track of your tasks. I mean, you don't have to be agile. And one of the things that we really focus on is making it flexible and easy to use enough that you can create your own system. You can be agile, you could be GTD, you could be whatever you want, using tags for organization and sorting, whatever you want to do. So remember, Mark, you don't have to be agile to use AgileTask.
Very good.
All right, let's get into our geek tool of the week. And our geek tool is it's such a cheap thing. I mean, it's kind of funny that we're even talking about it, because really people could just get them for free. Our geek tool of the week is the 2011 Subaru Forester, which our very own Mark Sanborn just purchased.
I think this is our most expensive geek tool in the history of Face Off Show.
It's the geek tool to end all geek tools.
Geek tool to end all geek tools. So yeah, I purchased a new car. I sold my other one, which is kind of funny. I used a web app to sell my car. Everyone kind of knows it. It's Craigslist, but I was pretty happy with it because I sold it in like 3 days for a good amount of money. So the Subaru Forester, I'm liking it. So the reason I upgraded got a new car was that I wanted something that was a little bit more Montana friendly, and that means that it's better on ice and snow, and it also has some clearance so I can kind of go backpacking or go off trail a little bit. Mm-hmm. My previous car did not even have anti-lock brakes or anything like that. So, and all the Subarus are all-wheel drive and all that jazz. Yeah. Plus, it's got the hatchback and the seats fold down, so I can throw in a bunch of gear. Or if I'm doing some home improvement projects, I can fit a 2x4 or two in there, whereas my previous car, I couldn't do that. So.
Yeah, pretty
that's
nice
kind
car.
Of my reasons for upgrading, and I'm liking it so far.
So there's a couple things about it particularly that you really like. And I guess, disclaimer, I don't know if these are like in every new car now, if they're standard or whatever, but they're just things that you and I thought were really cool about your new car. The first is, there's like this little blue LED that's up, you know, kind of up top up front, and it's this little blue LED. And what it happens is when you're driving at night, that little blue LED, it actually creates a ridiculous amount of light. And what it does is let you like play with your, you know, whatever's in the cup holder or anything below without impeding the view of the driver. So none of the light really reflects up against the windshield, which, you know, like sometimes if you turn on your map light in the middle of the night, you're like, oh, I can't see. Oh, my goodness. You know, because everything inside is getting reflected off the windshield inside. So this blue, little tiny blue light that just comes on automatically when you turn your headlights on, it gives a crazy amount of light, so you can really do things inside the car while you're driving around at night without disrupting the driver.
Yeah, and it's crazy because when I first kind of noticed the blue, you know, light in the car, I didn't really realize where it was coming from. Because it's a blue light that's just radiating off the cup holder, basically. But it's actually up at the top, near kind of the ceiling, and it kind of beams down.
Mm-hmm. And I like that new cars are coming, and new stereos you buy anyways for your car, are coming with aux ports so that you can plug your 18-inch mini jack right into it for your MP3 player or phone or whatever. Super nice. You don't have to do the whole FM transmitter thing or the tape deck converter, which, like, your car doesn't even have a tape deck, so you can't use a tape deck converter.
Yeah, so my previous car, I did the whole, like, Walmart FM transmitter, which basically what you do is you plug in this cigarette lighter type of deal that transmits to the FM radio, so you tune to, like, not, you know, let's say 107.1 or something. The problem is people next to you can listen to whatever you're listening to, for starters. The second thing is usually you have to crank your radio. I don't know why, but usually you have to crank your radio up to hear it. Mm-hmm. And then, like, if you switch to CD or something, it, like, blasts your ears out, which is funny because in the Subaru, the aux port has a different volume control than the CD because they've realized that happens often. So
another really cool thing, too, about the whole aux port, what I notice around in Bozeman especially, and I'm sure it's even worse in bigger cities because Bozeman is definitely not that big, but you'll drive around, and it's like every other person is on the same FM transmitter channel as you, and they always seem to have a more powerful one. So it's always like you're like driving around, and all of a sudden it's like you'll hear someone's like audiobook for like 2 seconds while you pass them, and you're like, what? That's just weird. And the aux port is just nice, good, high-quality audio all the way through. So check it out. Really like your Forester. I was giving you a hard time about it because I wanted Mark to get the Outback, but I think the Forester is a good choice. In the end, I think you picked the right one. So 2011 Subaru Forester. All right, let's get into our web apps. Enough of that junk. You know, the only bummer about that is we can't get Amazon referrals. I wouldn't mind getting an Amazon referral on a brand new car. I actually did search Amazon. They don't sell Subaru Foresters.
Are you serious?
Yeah. All right, let's
maybe
get
eBay
it.
Or something.
Yeah, exactly. Let's get into our web apps. Our first web app is called Bubble On. This is a really cute little website where basically you can just kind of register and then say how you feel about things. So anything like what they have some popular things that pop up first. So the 2014 Volkswagen Golf Blue Emotion. What it gives you is a little slider to say, you know, kind of what you think about it, and it goes from awesome all the way down to atrocious. And you can slide kind of however you feel about it. I think it looks kind of ugly, so I'm gonna put awful. And then you can see it sort of recalculate the overall score, and then you can get a breakdown between like men and women, and if you have friends, you can see kind of, you know, what your friends think about it. But there's all kinds of stuff on there. Like I saw, found McDonald's coffee. Guess what I rated it? 100, my favorite coffee in the world, McDonald's coffee. It's delicious. And then when you leave, I guess the other thing back to the web app is when you leave, you kind of tell what you think about it. You can leave a comment for other people. Super simple little web app, kind of cute, fun. I like it.
Quick question. Right now I'm looking at texting while driving, and I want to rate that as a bad thing. Uh-huh. Do I have to leave a comment or no?
No, if you register.
So when I hit post. Oh,
you don't
register.
Hit post. You only hit post if you want to leave a comment. The slider will automatically save if you're registered.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Texting while driving. I'm going to rate that right now. I think it's atrocious. I hate people to do that. Boom. Saved. There you go. Check it out. Real fun little web app. A great time waster if you want to waste some time and rate some cool things. The next one, again, we're going to pound through this episode because I tell you what, I am tired and I need some sleep. So let's move on. It was sent to us by Philip Downer, a good friend of ours, listens to the show quite a bit. It's called griddle.it, and it's a really simple way to, you know, like we talked about before, the image placement things, like where you could use the kitten thing to use a placeholder random kitten image, or the placeholder images that, where you could set certain dimensions. Well, this is kind of like that. It's just a quick way to put a grid line is as your background image so that you can make sure all your stuff lines up in a grid framework, or not even a grid framework, but any grid. So what you do is you set your background to, you know, hcbgriddle.it/ and then total width minus total number of columns or dash total number of columns dash gutter size, you know, your basic stuff that you need for a column, and set it to your background. And then you have a nice grid as your grid lines is your background. You can make sure everything lines up.
This is I could see this being especially useful if you're using something like 960 grid system or Blueprint, and just, you know, you've already designed your thing, but you want to make a small change. You want to see, you know, how far is this, you know, 6-column span or whatever. Mm-hmm. You just throw this up there and see.
Yeah.
Also, like I ran into this problem just a little bit ago where it's like I had this horizontal rule down at the bottom, but it looked like it was like to the right, like 3 pixels from like my top one. And yeah. I was like, I don't know. Is it right on or is it not? I think this would help. So
there you cool. go. Check it out. Griddle.it. Thanks, Phil, for sending that in, and we really appreciate it. Hey, if you guys listening have some news, a follow-up or a web application or even a geek tool you want us to talk about or a topic or interview you want us to do, go to faceoffshow.com/feedback and let us have it. We'd love to hear from you guys. Again, thanks to Phil for helping us out with the show today. We'd love to hear from people. And our next, before we get into our topic this week, which we're really excited about, we want to talk about a new product from our good friend here, Mark Sanborn, called Rocket Send It.
Yeah, so this is a project I started on, and I was, you know, originally thinking, like, you know, most projects that I do, oh, this will only take like a weekend and I'll have it done. It ended up taking quite a bit of my time, but I think in the end it's going to be worth it. So basically what this is, back in February, Amazon released an API for sending emails, which is really great. But I realized that not everybody wants to, or, you know, knows how to integrate with like Amazon APIs and things like this. Also, Amazon has some restrictions of how many emails you could send per day and per second even. So if you want to just take a huge list of emails and send to like, let's say, 400 people, you'd have to throttle it and make sure that you're only sending one per second instead of just saying, send this one message
here's
400 users right. or 400 recipients. So what I did is I created a product called Rocket Send It, which allows you to basically you type up your message like you would, you know, your marketing message, or, you know, you can even do it for like a registration or sign up. And those are, you know, called like transactional emails, for example. But you write it up like you normally would, and you place param like tags, like, you know, first name, last name, unsubscribe link or whatever inside the body text, and set the different parameters for the recipient and send your message, and we'll take care of the rest. As you know, you don't have to worry about reaching your daily send quota or, you know, throttling one per second or any of that. So just send us a bunch of emails and we'll send them to Amazon.
Great.
And then, so yeah, that's basically it in a nutshell.
Try free for 30 days. Ooh, hoo, hoo.
So basically what you do to try it free, just click on that button, sign up, and then you'll have to go get an Amazon account if you don't already have one. And you'll get 2,000 emails per month for free to try it out.
So check it out. Go to rocketsendit.com. What? No, rocketsend.it. You gave me so much gruff forever about your Rocket Ship It promo where I missaid the URL. And then you go and screw it all up with rocketsendit.com. Anyways, check it out. Rocketsendit.com from Mark Sanborn's friendly Rocket family of software products. Let's get into our topic this week, Mark. What do you got for us?
We've got time estimating for projects.
You know,
time estimation.
Like, I don't know why we even have to talk about this, because estimation is so easy. You just think about it and double it. I mean, come on, let's get out of here.
Or in my case, you think about it and quadruple it, or times 10.
But I mean, I guess that's sort of like the fallacy of estimation, is you always just go, oh, that'll take like an hour. You don't really think about it. You're usually wrong. Estimation is really hard. Really, the only people that are very good at estimation are the ones that have done it. It's a skill like anything else. Those that have done it a lot.
Yeah, I think if if you're a freelancer and you make your living off that and you do like, you know, tons of projects, you probably will end up getting this right eventually. Well, hopefully. I know I struggled with it, and I definitely got a bad taste for freelancing by and most of it was because of estimating.
Totally.
And what people do is they usually underestimate. They don't usually overestimate. So, you know, why is underestimating so common? The number one reason is that technologies for the project haven't been used before. I'm definitely one of those guys that are like, oh, I've heard about this new database or this new grid framework thingy that's supposed to save a bunch of time and all this stuff. And you start going at it and you run into a problem, and then all of a sudden you realize you've just spent 4 hours like digging through the documentation on how to fix a little thing. And yeah, all of a sudden your estimation is just going out the window. What you thought was going to take an hour is now taking 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. Another one is, at the time of estimating, there are gray areas or complete unknowns. So you've kind of got the end, you know, what the project is supposed to do or encompass, but you're not sure how to get there. Maybe it's how you're going to get, you know, how you're going to tie an API together, how you're going to, you know, get a certain aspect of the project going, totally. You know?
Yeah. It's difficult.
Sometimes you're like, well, you know, we'll tackle that when we get to it. But oftentimes, you know, it can just totally throw your estimation out the window. So if you do have gray areas or complete unknowns, make sure you talk them over. If you still don't understand it, maybe it's time to, you know, hire like an expert in that field mm-hmm. that's causing the gray area.
Yeah.
Or talk to the client. Maybe you could leave that part of the project out for the first release. Another one is, there's no previous project estimated versus actual data. Or you haven't done any kind of analysis on your previous estimates. So one of the things that's, you know, like, if you know that, I don't know, like you should, well, we're going to get into this, but one of the things you should do is break down your tasks and your mm-hmm. estimations. If you keep kind of a log of the things you do, like setting up the database or, you know, designing the logo or, setting up Google Analytics, you know, and you kind of set these things up and you kind of keep track of these, you'll totally. Know better how long it takes for those things.
Absolutely.
So yeah, if you're like, I don't know, go and do it without it. Go ahead.
I mean, you're going to have some bad estimations. I mean, until you do it and you realize, I think especially like, you know, I'll use myself an example. There's a lot of times I was completely unprepared and so I had some bad estimations, but I tell you, I really remember that now. I remember like, whoa, last time I integrated with an API that I had never used before, it took much longer than I thought, you know, because remember that time I got burnt where I estimated only 2 hours and ended up taking 6 and my client was really mm-hmm. angry and stuff. So those are just those sort of, you know, watershed flag marks in your head that help you realize, you know, when you did estimate bad and sort of, you know, helping your skill level get to the point where you estimate better.
Another thing is our memories aren't too good sometimes, and we're like, well, I think last time it only took me like an hour or two to do a user registration, you know, sign up thing.
Yeah.
You know, if you have the actual data, if it actually took you 4 hours the last time you worked on it, it'll help you with your future estimates.
Totally.
And the last one, you know, why it is estimating stuff for a project is not fun. We usually want to just get in there and code away or design away.
We're all champing at the bit, ready to go. And so we're like, that's going to take like an hour. That's going to take like an hour. Can I go work on it now? Can I work on it now?
The problem is, what's really not fun is being under budget or going down the totally wrong path for the project and wasting a bunch of time. So even if it isn't fun, just do it.
Yeah. You mean over budget. Usually being under budget is a good thing.
Over budget.
Yeah. I mean, because a lot of times, I mean, you'll talk about some ways to help sort of limit this, but yeah, you know, your client, you know, they're sort of expecting to pay X amount of what they're going to get for X amount. When it ends up costing more, they're usually not very happy about it.
So we get into some general tips. The more you break down your project into, you know, the basic parts and pieces, the easier it will be to estimate. Yeah. Another one is to add a margin of error. And, you know, this one I've seen anywhere from double it, like you were saying, to add or subtract 15% for wiggle room. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think just saying double it is kind of bad form. I mean, you're kind of overcompensating for your lack of estimating.
Right.
Skills.
Exactly. You shouldn't goof stuff up just because you're a terrible estimator. And I think, you know, looking at a percent is a good way to go about it, like you sort of talk about here.
I do recommend, you know, giving a range so they're not going to hold, you know, like they're not going to hold you to it if, you know, and you have to work 10 extra hours. Mm-hmm. Definitely give a range. Remember, this is an estimate. You're not giving a final. I mean, no one can predict every outcome that's going to happen during your project. So,
yeah, I mean,
I think your client can expect a range.
Yeah, I mean, a range is good, but even sometimes, and maybe this might be bad form, I ended up putting a lot on a lot of things like, this is a non-binding estimate. Like, just so you know, non-binding, you know, actual work will be charged.
Mm-hmm. Document, and this, we kind of talked about this, document your estimation and how you come up with it.
Totally.
This is, I mean, and this doesn't mean you have to show your client exactly how you came up with it or how many hours you're estimating for each thing. It's mainly for, but you could if you wanted to, it's mainly for you to understand where your estimations went wrong in the future, mm-hmm. and in the past, so you can check out your previous ones and do some actual data analysis and see where you underestimate and where you overestimate. Mm-hmm. Estimation is not like a commitment. Always give your client a range.
So one thing I want to talk about though is where you document your estimation. And this is where breaking it down will help you, because you're going to be documenting that while you break it down. You know, you can't just in your head break the whole project down into small chunks and remember how to tell your clients. So you're going to write that down. You're going to say, these are the big chunks. Okay, I'm going to break up these big chunks into small chunks. And a good way to sort of see how bad you are at estimating, or just, you know, to help gauge how hard it is and how better you're getting, estimate the big chunks and then break it down into the smaller chunks and then estimate the smaller chunks and look at the difference between those. You know, like if you're mm-hmm. like, oh, registration system, that's, you know, 4 hours. And then you break it down to each small thing. You're like, registration system actually ended up totaling about 10 to 12 hours. You're like, whoa, okay, yeah, I was really wrong about that.
A good kind of rule of thumb is to break down until you're 10% or less of the total effort.
Yeah.
I would even strive to go further than that, depending on the size of the project. And then another big one is to watch out for scope creep. If your client, you know, if you start becoming kind of an employee to your client rather than trying to create something that you guys agreed on in the beginning, all the estimations are just going to go straight out the window. And absolutely, it's going to be bad for both of you.
Another thing to think about too is if you're working with a client is to make sure that, I mean, we want you to break down to make your estimations better, but you also need to make sure that you don't spend too much time breaking it down and scoping it out without some sort of commitment from them. So like I'll say, it was a great tip I learned from Phil Downer. Gosh, he's just popping up all over this show one time. He told me, he was like, you know, I go and do a really loose, you know, sort of discussion with the client. But in that, my first really loose estimation, he's like, I put requirements gathering and further estimation in as an item in that estimate, you know, because that way it's like, you know, that requirements gathering stuff is an actual product that they could then, if they wanted to, take and shop around to other shops if they wanted to. But if you're going to go through that work, you know, make sure you balance it out and do get paid for stuff that is going to be very, very specific. You know, you want to try and get work. You don't want to be like, well, I'm not going to do anything unless you pay me. But at the same time, when it starts getting too detailed, you need to let them know that it's time to start paying and put that in your initial estimates as well.
Very good point. Some of the strategies for dividing your work and putting time estimations on them. There's kind of the three things to do here. The first is to count, second is compute, and then third, judge. So to explain those further, try to identify the items in your work which you can actually count, like how many files, how many classes, for example, how many different sets of menus or UIs that you're designing. The things that you can actually quantify, go ahead and count those and do your estimations based on them. Second, is to calculate the data in the effort, then, you know, in person per days, how long it's going to take to make that many files or classes. And then only as a last resort, use your judgment, you know, on the unknown stuff. Like if you don't know how long it took to set up the database, or if that's something new to you, you know, that's just, it's going to be an unknown and your estimation is going to be a wider, you know, range.
Yeah.
So use that as a last resort.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, sort of like the final note is that it just estimation is hard. You need to practice it.
It is.
And you're just going to have to go with your gut sometimes and try and, you know, look at your skills and what you can do and just make your best guess, because that's really an estimation is just your best guess that you can possibly make. But make sure it is your best. Really put effort into it and don't just, you know, shoot from the hip, because in the end, you're going to be, you and your clients, you know, but you also are going to be the ones that are hurting and really sad that you, you know, didn't put the effort in that you wanted to.
Yeah, that's a good point. Estimation is one of those things that is one of the most difficult things to do in our field. And there's very few people that get it right. And even if you get it right, you can get it wrong sometimes. I tend to do it a lot.
Right. So don't shoot yourself in the foot and don't hit yourself. That wraps up for this episode of Face Off. I want to remind you, you can subscribe to the show by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. If you haven't done so yet, please do so. We love to see our subscriber numbers go up. Also, I'm going to ask you a favor this week. If you enjoy the show, please tell some people you think might enjoy this show as well. Spread the love. We'd love to have more people listen to the show, and we love our audience for helping us out. You can also leave feedback for the show by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. We've got Twitter, Facebook, email. Love to hear from you guys. Please let us do that. Thank you for listening, and we will see you guys next week.